it is an important factor. When I was a child, I had a very, very, very bad temper. And I used to pray to God to take away that temper that I had, because it was really nasty for a little kid. But I had parents that had very, very, very bad tempers. And they were very violent people. And consequently, I, being who I am, was feeling a lot of their stuff, a lot of the violence, a lot of the anger. And I didn't realize that it wasn't necessarily mine that I was carrying, but I was being programmed. And I finally got to a place where I learned to master my temper. One thing was having all the spirits that were attached to me removed, which really, really helped. Who knew? And the other was in understanding the difference between temper and righteous anger. When you explode on people, when you have temper, it comes from here with a shaky feeling. A feeling like you want to cry, explode, like you've been pinned into a corner, and it's a horrible, horrible feeling. And when you explode, you feel weakened. Okay? Righteous anger is a whole different feeling. It comes from here too, but it goes like this. And it gives you strength, and you don't have that shakiness, and it doesn't come with emotion. It comes with righteousness because you're in the right. And it can be explosive too, but it's in a different way. It's in a more powerful way. And it doesn't leave you all weak. So I have learned to deal with temper. I'm not 100%. I haven't made my Godhood yet or anything. But I've done way better. Getting yourself hurt, getting your feelings hurt. That's taking things personally. We have to learn how to stop doing that, because that can just strip your ego, strip your self-esteem, and it hurts, just downright hurts you. And it makes you feel less than and unimportant. Until you find out that people do and say what they do because it's who they are, not who you are. Which is kind of sad in itself. All of our emotions come from places of our parents, our grandparents, our siblings, the people around us, the training that we go through in school. School's especially good. That's where we really can be stripped down. You've got your bullies and the people that you give power to because you want to fit in, you want to be like everybody else. And it's a tough place to be. I think we talked a little bit about bullies at one of the meetings that we had recently. I don't know if you were here or not. But we are dealing with bullies now, nationwide. We're dealing with politically correct and all these things that we are supposed to do or can't do or should do. I'm sorry, I don't believe in that. So forgive me, I'm never politically correct. Merry Christmas.
How do you reduce bullyism?
Number one, you don't react to it. There's two ways of handling a bully. One way is you stand and let them know you're not going to be bullied. The other way is you completely diffuse it by not reacting at all.
Because you're at a higher level at that point.
You are.
And yeah.
It depends upon circumstances. If you're in a dangerous position where you're going to get hurt, you better stand. You better stand hard. Because you can't ignore that. if you're in a position where you can completely ignore it and walk away from it, recognize it for what it really is, it's all about their ego and their personal fears and their insecurities.
And it's going to deteriorate eventually because it's not truth.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I dealt with a lot of bullies growing up.
Yeah.
And I was real short. Not that I aren't. Not that I'm really off you. Okay. Do you have any questions so far or any points? Okay. The flower essences that we have, and I really advise people to look into that because they help to diffuse emotional blockages and resistances within your body. And each one is capable of deleting 2 to 3 emotional blockages, depending on what they are, sometimes more, sometimes less. But it's a good way to diffuse it without you going through a lot of trouble and a lot of hassle and trying to figure out what's wrong with you. It's kind of like a shortcut with a psychiatrist in a bottle. They take care of the buttons that you have. Interestingly enough, when your emotion gets triggered, there is like a little tape that goes off of response. And then that tape goes off, and then the other person, their tape goes off in response. And if you've lived with that person or you've had a long association with that person, those tapes will be the same thing almost every time. A little different, but basically the same. And what you want to do is you want to change those tapes. You have to change your response. Once you change your response, you change the neuron pathways, actually, within the brain itself, and it can break you out of that blockage that you have developed. So what would be a good way to change that? My husband used to say to me, "You're Miss Know-It-All, aren't you?" And I would immediately go into the tape of justification. No, I'm not. And I don't know why. Da da da. I changed the tape on that. He said that to me, and I said, "Yes, I am." Pity you don't listen to me once in a while.
I love it.
He never said it again. So you have to start looking at ways to changing your responses, your patterns. Once you accomplish that, it messes them up as much as it changes you.
Well, it brings them to a higher level.
It does, because they're suddenly faced with not the tape, not that emotional response button, but they have to think about it.
The truth.
Yeah. Which is really cool. So it's a really good way to start handling the process. I had a lady, I love this particular story because her husband knew her button. So her mother was a sergeant in the Army, okay? So whenever he wanted to dig her, he would say, "All right, Sarge." So I told her, I said, "You need to change your response to him from here on out," and saying, "Don't call me my mother," you know, going off on him, doing the tape, say, "Yes, I am," and you will snap too. She did it. It stopped. You understand?
Well, she takes all the fun out of it.
Oh, not for him. I mean, not for her. Definitely for him.
On his end, well, that's not fun anymore.
You know? Yes, it is.
So, I mean, because I love pushing buttons, too, just to, especially when you know people are going to react a certain way.
Oh.
I've been known to do that, you know, once.
Shame.
I know. But still, when it's not fun anymore, you'll stop.
It gets turned on you.
Yeah, that'd be good.
So we have a first-hand account that it works.
There you go.
I had a lady that was a bully to everybody when I waited table, and she was a black lady. And one day she kept saying, why aren't you getting my food ready? It's because I'm black, isn't it? That's why you're doing it, isn't it? I looked at her and said, yeah, that's it. And she looked at me and then started busting out laughing, and we got along fine after that.
Yeah. You gotta change the response. Mm-hmm.
She was used to people cowering.
Carol, we're talking about pushing buttons, but we're only mentioning negative buttons. How about pushing positive buttons?
I'm not worried about positive buttons.
No, okay. But I mean, I think that it's probably a good thing to press those positive buttons.
Well, everybody loves to be stroked, mm-hmm. which that can be a little dangerous too. Mm-hmm. The problem is, that's not something that we need to be so concerned about, as we do need to be concerned about those things that tear us down and cause problems in our lives. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm addressing.
I think I feel like more people that I know have more negative buttons and are at more risk for having their negative buttons pushed than maybe having their ego stroked just a smidge too much.
You can stroke somebody's ego way too much.
But the majority of people are the self.
They don't do it, no.
That doesn't. When it happens, you know them. You can, they shimmy, they put their little tutu on and they shimmy across and they stroke my ego, please.
You're so funny, Savannah. I'll pitch yourself off.
Do you want me to make you a tutu? I will. I'll make you one for Christmas.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Well, your positive buttons are not going to tear you down. It's your negative ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But Carol, as far as redemption work is concerned, do you not need to hit the positives to get them to the higher level? Vibrationally speaking.
When I talk to people, I tell them the truth. If it's positive, I give them positive. If it's a negative that they need to wake up to, I give them the negative. The redemption is that's a whole different ballgame. Explain.
As far as redemption, do you not need to get people to realize they are at a higher vibration? That they are at a higher level?
I'm not sure
or
what you're
asking.
Or
just give them the choice to go there.
Are you talking about with the lifting?
No, redemption work, right, as far as people that are earthbound, spirits that are earthbound.
So that is the first part of the lifting, like the
Yeah, that's the first part of the lifting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's all what right.
that is. Right. Years and years and years ago, I used to have to talk people into the light.
Right.
But that, I don't need to do that now.
Right. Use the band of mercy.
I use the band of mercy.
Right. So you're essentially appealing to a higher level to assist in that.
I appeal to those that are already at that high level to do what they,
okay.
what they're supposed to do, their duties through God.
I know people that have specialized in soul retrieval and going into helping with redemption, but they do it on an individual level. And what you're talking about is actually at the next level, to actually ask the band of mercy to do it.
Yeah, I mean, in my beginning steps, I did do it that way before I had the knowledge of working with the band of mercy.
Right.
Before there's beginning levels.
Because it's not easy to commit someone to dead, first of all. That's one of the main challenges in redemption work, is it not?
Well, in the early stages of it,
yeah.
You don't tell somebody they're dead.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's a learned art to get someone to understand they are no longer in body, let me put it that way. It's
called tact.
Lots of tact. Think about it. Is that not the biggest part?
In the early stages.
Yeah.
I never did that.
You don't get past that, you're not going to get any further.
Well,
have you ever had a spirit so difficult about, no, I'm alive, I can see my hands?
Well, no, I never approached him with, you're dead.
Oh, okay.
I had better sense. Good God.
I didn't know if that was part of it. Like,
no.
You must believe me that you are.
I mean, there are people that go in, you're dead, you need to go into the light. No. A person is a person in their body, out of their body. They are a person. They are treated with respect, for Pete's sakes. Not like they show on TV, okay? When I dealt with spirits who are people, I acknowledged that. First off, I said, depending on who it was, I'd say, number one, you have lost your physical body. Your physical body has died. You are alive and well. You are safe. But you are bound in. You're earthbound. We need to get you to the light. And they'd say, well, what's the light? And I'd explain the light to them. Well, what lies beyond the light? I said, heaven lies beyond the light. And you need to be there. Would you like to test it? And they'd say, maybe. I said, well, I would ask for the light to be shown for these people, whoever it was. Now put your hand in the light. How does it feel? It feels warm. It feels comfortable. I said, you're safe there. I would talk to him like that. I talked to him the way I'd want to be talked to. One of them I had to say, he said, well, my body's died? Well, I'm okay. I said, sure you're okay. You're in your spiritual body, your soul body. Put your hand on the table. He put his hand on the table and went through the table. You're at a different resonance. You're at a different vibration. The material world is no longer correct for you. And then I'd explain to them what's happened to them and to go into the light. And I still do that from time to time, depending.
If the Band of Mercy doesn't seem to be able to do it?
Of course I can do it.
Well, then why would you need to do it?
See, where have you been?
Just in question, sir.
The Band of Mercy, I'll explain this again. The Band of Mercy are souls who had been bound, earthbound, and who were prayed into the light one way or the other and chose to help others that are bound in the outer darkness, which is fourth dimension, or outer darkness, or purgatory, is mentioned in the Bible or in the Catholic Church. And they can do so much, but somebody in the material world has to call them into effect for them to actually be able to take people into the light. They have to have authorization from somebody in body in this third dimension. In which case, a lot of people are stuck out there. There's a lot of hauntings out there, unfortunately, more than what you'd like to think there is. Now the Band of Mercy has authority that if I call upon them to remove them from a house or property, they can then go ahead and get those people and give those people a choice. They have a choice between protected sanctuary or going directly into the light. They always have choice. Even after death, you have free will choice. But you're limited to those two choices at that point in time because the person that owns the property, who has actual authority in the material world, can then call upon the Band of Mercy to do this. Then they can choose either protected sanctuary or they can choose to go into the light. Protected sanctuary is in effect in the light. It's kind of like a halfway house, and it facilitates them to get healing, help, understanding, so that when it is they're situated and they're acclimated and their loved ones have worked with them, because their loved ones come in and work with them, then they can go into the light. Understand? Yeah. Sort of.
It's a prayer class.
Pardon? Metaphysically, from what I understand, the closer you get to getting them to touch the light, the more the vibe can increase.
Really? Okay.
And it's not something, like it's not our job, even though we have this knowledge, it's not knowledge, it's not our job to walk around and seek out all of the dead people that are
dead. Oh no, we're not allowed to do that. No, people. We're not allowed.
For for me, when it if there's a spirit, they will come and say, help me, like something's wrong, help me, help me, help me. And I asked, how did you know to come to find me? And some people have either said, they told me to find you, not knowing who, not really being able to identify they. They told me to find you. I had a friend who passed, and how did you find me? They told me to find you. Okay. Or your light, they told me to go to the light, and you were the brightest thing I could find. I've had that one too. And they knew to come to me because they knew that I had the knowledge to be able to help them.
The moth.
Well, she's a light.
Yeah.
And they're drawn to that light. Yeah. And unfortunately, people that are mediumistic and have those abilities, and there's a lot of people that are very mediumistic and to varying degrees, they tend to draw spirits to them, especially if they live near graveyards or that sort of thing. And we tend to be gravitating to haunted houses. I was always gravitating to a haunted house, and if I wasn't, they were always gravitating to me.
So what is it that helps the soul that is earthbound see that you or Savannah or other sensitives are sensitives, are people that could respond to them?
I think we're brighter.
You're brighter physically. I mean, likewise.
Well, likewise.
Okay. That's what I got from the previous conversation. I just wanted to confirm
that's,
that.
That's what
interesting.
One told me.
So Christ would be the ultimate light, then.
Yeah. No.
I just had it.
Oh, okay.
Can I scratch?
No.
Of course you can.
Would be the ultimate light with Christ not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Christ, the light is Christ,
right,
in essence.
Right.
And it is amazingly bright.
So if mediumistic people shone brighter to souls that are earthbound, then Christ would be the ultimate light.
Yeah.
And that is the light.
That is the light.
Thank you. That makes a lot more sense. From a physics standpoint, it makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Yeah.
If you still do the daily lifting, can you still have attachments?
Yes. Yes.
That would have to be.
The daily lifting does not protect you. Okay? I'm sorry. I wish it did. It would be nice. We could ease through this lifetime without any major problems. And we wouldn't have to worry about the spiritual stuff. But it does not protect you. What it does is it takes any that you have collected throughout the day or the week or whatever it happens to be, and it redeems them back to the light.
Okay, so when you do that at that moment, you should be clean, not...
Yeah.
I mean, no one can still hold on or anything like
now,
that.
Now, there are levels. Glad you brought that up. As you learn to do the lifting and you make it a part of your daily life or weekly life, you actually evolve in your authority. You get higher authority. So things that you might not have been able to lift off of you, as you get authority, those things can be lifted off of you. It's a learning process. It's all about learning. It would be lovely, you know, if we just came here, we learned one thing, and that solved the problem. But it's kind of like school, you know, you've got first grade, second grade, and each level's a little bit more knowledge, a little higher knowledge, and it gets you to the next one, and to the next one, and so on. So even this spiritual process is the exact same way. As you develop and you grow and you learn more, your authority gets stronger, bigger. They get to know you. You get to know them. You learn more. There's more you can call on to help you. Did I explain that okay? That's a tough one. I didn't know it in the beginning either. I've had to learn that.
You've said in the past it lasts for 12 hours.
No, it lasts for about 24 hours, but it's depends.
How about an hour and a half?
It can work for an hour and a half. It's not a protection. Okay? Now, the only one is the Benai Or, which is a protection. But outside of that, it's not a protection. It is getting whatever you have brought to you
at that time.
Has, has come to you at that point in time.
You're taking a spiritual shower, if you will.
Yeah, I like that. That'll work. Yeah.
You may blow dry your hair, walk outside and step in the mud, and then you realize, or fall and like bust your face, and then you say, wow, I need another shower.
Well, people ask me, why should I do it on a daily basis? You don't have to do it on a daily basis, but it keeps you clean. The bad thing, I don't know how we got into this. Thank you, Steve.
I actually was going to ask about that tonight.
Oh, okay. All right. It works then. It goes the way it's supposed to go. Never goes the way I figure it's going to go.
Where's the fun in that?
Really, really. But when spirits attach to you, unfortunately, whatever they died of can actually begin to manifest in your body. So it's dangerous. You know, if you want to take the chance, that's fine. It's my job to give you the information. It's your responsibility to do it or not do it.
Well, not to mention the fact that any of their fun vices that they might have happened to have.
Thank you. That's
true. Influence you as well.
Alcoholics. If you like alcohol, you have drawn to you a whole lot of people that were alcoholics, and your tendencies will become much stronger. If you are into drugs, you're going to pull people that are going to try to live through you vicariously and get you to use drugs so they can get high too. Eaters, people that love food.
That's what's happened lately. There we go.
They attach to you. I had this lady come to me, and she was putting on weight, just tons and tons of weight, and there was a spirit attached to her from the place that she moved into. This woman had committed suicide. She was about 300 pounds.
Wow.
And she was having a wonderful time eating. She hadn't been able to eat. And so she was vicariously eating through this woman. So, and it carries dangers with it.
It's parasitic.
Very parasitic, exactly. And it drains your energy. It really drains your energy. And it affects your emotions badly. I had a family. I really liked them. It was a mother, her son, and her son's partner. And the mother was terribly depressed. I touched into her, and that poor woman was so depressed. And they had a spirit in their apartment, and the son couldn't get any focus, couldn't get anything really done or accomplished, and his partner was having horrific nightmares, just horrible nightmares, and thoughts of murdering people and killing people and torturing people. So I did a lift, and this was all over the phone. I did lifting on the mother, the son, and his partner. They called today, and the mother's depression is gone. The spirit is gone from the apartment. The depression, the chatter and all the things that the other two guys were going through was lifted, and this need for violence was gone, and the nightmares had gone, which I thought was really cool. And the spirit was gone, by the way.
So that was probably a dark spirit, wasn't it?
Yeah, we have somebody that had been murdered there.
Oh,
that wasn't really a dark spirit. They had been smothered with a pillowcase. And they appeared to the people that were living there on occasion. So that they were needing help.
And
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
And just because a spirit doesn't show up as having been smothered by a pillowcase, even if they are quote-unquote friendly or nice, that doesn't mean that you should keep them as pets.
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've run across that. I have a lot of people that go, well, I don't want to lose my ghost. I mean,
I
like them. They make me feel good. They make me happy.
They're not hurting anybody. It doesn't bother anybody.
They're
just there.
They need a place to stay.
It's not Hotel Earth.
The problem is this. How would you like to be somebody's pet?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you much rather be in the light with your loved ones, being who you are, and not having to be somebody's pet in their house, and then they die or they leave? And then you're still there. It goes back to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You don't do that to another human being. And sometimes it's children, which is really heartbreaking. I know a lot of it is through just total ignorance. People don't have a clue. They don't know how to get these people into the light. And that is one of the major reasons. A lot of people think they are protecting the spirits that are there in their household, because they don't want them out wandering around, if you will. So there's all sorts of reasons here. But in truth, if you can get them into the light, that is what you should do. That's the right thing to do. And I hope if any of you get earthbound, and I'm telling you, it's so easy. It is so easy that it'll be done for you as well.
And we're coming up on that time of the year.
Christmas.
Annual prayers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, is there anything you can do annually to protect yourself in case something happens?
I do spiritual insurance. I pray once a year. I pray other times too, but the once a year prayer is I ask the band of mercy that should I pass and not know that I have passed, would they please take me directly into the light in the name of Jesus Christ?
That's a good idea.
Because I'm telling you, you will not know. When you die, you will not know.
And that's good to say for your children, too, if they're under the age of 13.
It is. It really, really is. There is no feeling change. One minute you're, one second you're in your body, the next second you're out, and you do not feel any change. And unless you turn around and you see yourself lying there, you don't know what's happened to you. Because I've had people that were close to me, who passed, who came to me and didn't know what had happened to them. So, be aware. Steve, you had a question?
I was just saying, as far as the, you were saying the lifting, as far as the lifting is concerned, none of it's protection except for the benign aura. Mm-hmm. Is that the reason you do not pray to the benign aura before you do an exorcism?
No. They have nothing to do with that.
Why is benign aura left out as far as an exorcism? Why do you leave it out as far as the beginning?
It has nothing to put, it's not part of you mean the lifting?
The lifting.
Okay.
If you're getting ready to do an exorcism and you're doing a lifting first.
You don't use the benign.
Leave the benign aura out?
They have no authority. That's not their authority.
It's just wasted words. Yeah, okay.
Certain members of God's spirit community have the authority to remove certain
things.
They don't
remove anything.
Okay. All right.
Others have the authority to stand guard and watch your back, sort of.
Gotcha.
Sort of. They can expose. There are things that they can do, but they have their particular authority or duties, if you will, and it's not to lift.
Well, here's what I was getting at. I was just wondering from a physics standpoint, as I like to approach things, if you invoke the benign aura for protection of a house you're getting ready to do an exorcism on, that wouldn't prevent the entities there from leaving.
You don't use them for that.
Okay.
At all.
Yeah. I just wondered why you didn't do the benign aura thing as far as
you're talking about with the house lift, the house blessing. House
for
lifting,
a house
blessing.
Cleansing. Yeah.
Oh, it's not even
for
in there.
House cleansing has everything except the benign aura as far as the lifting.
No, the house blessing is only in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and in the name of Jesus Christ.
I can see where Steve's cut.
Okay.
Because with the beginning of the house blessing, it says, in order to make this go a little bit smoother, say the first three paragraphs, which is the band of mercy.
Of the lifting.
Right, the lifting.
Of the lifting. So the band of mercy.
Oh, okay.
The formula that you use.
Okay.
It says on the house cleansing and blessing, exorcism, you use the first three paragraphs of the lifting, excluding the benign aura paragraph, before you do.
Okay.
And that's the reason why I was wondering what's the significance of that.
All right. Benign aura is the Great White Brotherhood, the 70-sec SEC. Of the Great White Brotherhood. They were the teachers of Christ. They helped in teaching Christ. They they have nothing to do with removing any spirits. They don't do any of that. They have nothing to do with that. Okay? They can be used in certain situations. They give you absolute total protection dealing with ET exclusively. That's it.
Terrestrial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't do anything else. So you don't use them on the house cleansing. You don't use them on any of those things. Now I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I didn't know that though.
I had to translate from Steve to Carol for you there for a second.
Well, yeah.
In the psychic talk.
Yeah, in the psychic talk. Thank you. Yeah, we do that. But that's a good question.
Thanks.
And does the lifting basically deal with, it's talking about negative and things that could harm you as far as to remove them?
There are negative energies, there's
right.
demonic energies.
All the negative stuff. That's what it's really helping clear you of.
Yeah. Anything and everything, basically. So, yeah.
Okay.
The first is all unclean spirits,
right.
thought forms, elementals,
right, right.
unnamed energies, which can be anything.
And it's only off of your person.
No,
or out
of your
house.
Your person, your house, all you have domain over.
And so if there's not, I'm trying to figure out how to say this, if they don't fall in that category, then it's not going to take care of them, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Like the
like family friends that come around, you know, family comes and checks on you from time to time. You're not running them out.
Oh, no, you don't touch them. They don't get touched.
So,
if they're from the light,
right.
they have no authority over them. They
what
don't get touched.
What about spirits that are not there for any negative or any type of...
That's under the band of mercy.
And it's still under the band of mercy, even if they're just there. Okay.
It's children. It's people that are wonderful, good people that have gotten lost or earthbound for whatever reason.
I just had one visit me right after I did it the other night, as soon as I fell asleep, and it just really...
Well, it's not a protection.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Would a floating protected sanctuary be appropriate?
It can be
if it's
appropriate to have that done. See, the reason all this stuff happens is for your knowledge, for your understanding, for you to learn, or it wouldn't be happening.
Just wish it would happen during daylight hours or awake when I'm awake. It scares me, and I'm not prepared for it. And it's
for your knowledge. And each person goes through whatever they need to go through for their knowledge. There are some people that don't go through anything. That's just not there for them. And that's fine. There are some people that are shut down and never feel a thing. Never go through anything. That's fine. But the vast majority of people do to some extent or another. It's for their knowledge, for their learning. And the more they want in the way of spiritual knowledge, the more is given to them in the way of spiritual knowledge.
Here's one for you. Just
okay.
In your experience, mm-hmm. if someone has newly passed versus someone who's been passed for a long time, do they give off any type of different energy?
No. No. Mm-mm. No, not to me. I don't feel any difference with them.
Because the one the other night, it was like they were alive. It was like
they're
it was
all
a person.
Alive.
Well, no, but I mean, it was like there was a presence like in body form next to me.
Yeah.
But not in spirit form. It was different. It felt different.
Some people, when they leave their physical body, they believe so strongly they're in their physical body, they have a physical body presence.
Okay.
They're all the same, though.
Because they were able to touch me and everything.
Yeah, they can do that. If they have more presence about them.
Gotcha. So it's all depending on them and what they're thinking and how they're feeling.
Yeah, so to speak, or their understanding.
Okay.
Did you ever see the movie Ghost?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember the guy in the subway?
It's been a long time since I've seen it. Maybe you need to watch it again.
You need to watch it again.
That's something he had learned.
It's something he had learned. Yeah.
It's not something he necessarily was. Are there some souls that are more
strong,
dense, if you will?
Yeah, there are. There are.
And why is that?
Because they're intense in body.
So So whatever, probably the lower their vibration rate in body, mm-hmm. the lower their vibration rate. Mm-hmm. Well, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. And consciousness or an out of body. Yeah.
Especially violent people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of anger. If you have a lot of emotion, a lot of anger, you can present more energy. Light, airy energy doesn't, and you can feel it, but it doesn't have the drama of the violence. Mm-hmm. Like when I walk into a house and there a murder was committed in the house, there might have been a wonderful wedding that preceded, but I'm not going to pick up on the wedding, I'm going to pick up on the murder. Because that's where the energy is so powerful. It's in the trauma of the actual violence.
That makes sense.
I just had a lovely little quick clip. Hmm. Like when a person experiences a trauma, part of them can get a little bit stuck in their ways, that they can have triggers, emotional triggers that will take them back to that trauma.
Yes, absolutely.
The earth,
yes,
can also have, when that trauma happens, part of the earth's energy gets stuck in that time and that space.
Yes.
And you can go back into it.
That's battlegrounds. I've gone to battlegrounds, Civil War battlegrounds, so forth, and I saw the battle taking place. I felt it, and I smelled blood. And gun, and I was there.
Aren't there some of them still just fighting away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of it's an imprint. Not all of it is spirit. Some of it's a physical traumatic imprint of energy that is just so powerful because of all the trauma that it has locked it in a space of time.
Isn't that also how artifacts get imprinted?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You bet. Now you're getting it. Now we're rolling.
What do you mean by artifacts?
If they are imprinted with violence, if they're imprinted over time, I can touch an artifact and go back to that particular time frame.
Explain artifact.
A piece of ceramic, pottery, jewelry, different things.
Glasses.
Yeah, glasses.
When the Mayans did this human sacrifice, if the same knife was used over and over again to cut out living person's heart,
When I went to the Temple of the Sun in Mexico, I sat on the step and I watched beheaded bodies falling down the steps and then the heads falling down the steps. And we were with a group, and I was telling everybody, I had to get away from there because it was freaking me out. It turned out that they found 5 bodies that had actually been rolled. Normally, they didn't roll the bodies down the steps.
Just the head, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the body. And they found the bodies at this Temple of the Sun, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, there are, that's why I loved, not always love. It's always interesting, that's a better way, terminology, to go to ruins to see if there's any imprinted time areas. There's one at, not Machu Picchu, Chichen Itza in Mexico, where there are, you can walk through Chichen Itza and you'll hit this energy, and it's a really weird time energy that sort of takes you back to that time, and then you walk out of it. Then you'll hit another one, and it'll take you back into that time, and you'll walk out of it. It's the weirdest thing.
I've been to Chichen Itza, and I experienced that. I didn't know what it was.
That's what it was.
Like, whoa, I'm back when they were playing games.
Yeah. And the temple, the main temple is right here. That time frame is right over to the other side of that temple, over where the sinkhole. Yeah, it's right in through there.
And I experienced it where they played the games.
Yeah, there's some there too. Yeah. You bet.
The Colosseum had that.
Oh, the Colosseum. Well, I love to tell the story. We went to Italy, to Rome. We went to the Colosseum. And he was with us. And all of a sudden, he got on guard. His knuckles broke loose, they swelled and broke open, and there was some bleeding, as I recall, or redness or bleeding.
Oh yeah, they were split wide open.
Yeah, and blood. And he went right back into that time frame. He was a gladiator. And it was freaky because he couldn't, and this poor guy was in a gladiator suit. He jumped in front of
a Roman soldier.
They're not very big, are they?
No, they're not. I just knew he was going to kill this poor guy before we got out of there. But he went through a couple of those experiences when we went on trips. What was the other one that was when we went to
Mexico?
Mexico, yeah.
We got so
the
sick.
Games.
Yeah.
Well, there were games there too.
That weird game that you played with the rock and the little hoops.
Yeah, the ball with the hoop. Yeah.
And
I thought he got so sick.
I couldn't get in. I didn't make it inside.
No.
I did. And then you had carried out.
He was fine as long as he didn't get on the ground or where that was. He was okay. It's a shame. You missed out.
That was me in Austria.
Yeah, you hit one there too. But see, there are times, there are places that they call them power places, and some of these places are truly power places. Machu Picchu. There is a line that as you go into Machu Picchu, as you cross this invisible line, every pain in your body, every illness, every health problem is virtually gone. And you feel young and fabulous, and there's no soreness. And one of our guys...
Joy didn't remember that.
I don't remember that. I just remember, like, at one point where these little walkways converged, and it was raining, and people were coming. I was afraid I was going to fall off.
No, I'm not talking about that.
No,
you
I know.
You remember when Gary had the Montezuma's? Were you with us?
That was the last time?
Yeah. See, that had nearly dissipated.
No, okay. That's why.
It nearly dissipated. There's been so many people there. It's kind of wrecked it.
So Machu Picchu heals you for temporarily.
It did, but you walk back over that line and get it right back.
Talk about Montezuma's revenge. I like that story.
Yeah, Gary, who was with us, he had Montezuma's revenge bad, really bad. And he was really scared because there was only one bathroom. And it was at the entrance. And there was nothing else, okay? We went over that line. It went away. He was so happy. He's like, oh, good, it's gone. We crossed back over that line. He ran to the bathroom. And it was completely back.
Oh. So that must have been the first trip.
It was the first trip, yeah. The second trip, it was still there, but it had been lessened. And the last time I was there, most of the energy had really been depleted. You get 200 people a day. Or more at that point, there was more than 200 a day. Yeah.
Did you film anything at Tulane?
At some point?
I don't know. I doubt it. Mm. What?
Did you film anything at Tulane?
I loved Tulane.
So did I.
The energy there was refreshing.
It felt good. That's what I thought too.
It felt really, really good. Tulane.
U-L-U-M-E?
T-U-L-U-M, I believe.
What country is this in?
Mexico.
Yes, in the Yucatan.
Now, I don't know where we're going to all these subjects, but it's okay. And Tulum, all the pyramids were one-third of the size of regular pyramids. Everything was one-third the size because the people there were only 3 feet or 3.5 feet high. All of them.
You would have been like a giant.
I would have been wondrous. So everything was made to scale for these people. Now, we found other places in Guatemala that were just like that, where there were cities that, again, these were little teeny tiny people. And the cities fit them.
There was one built, there was one ruin that looked, it reminded me so much of one in Greece, and it was just like, it was almost like I was in Greece instead of being there. It was really weird. It was the way the columns and stuff were placed, and I don't know if it was something, maybe I had been to both of them before, but it was,
I don't know.
It was very strange.
I don't know. All I know is I really enjoyed the energy there, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed the feel of it there. There was one man that was buried among all those other small people. He was 6 foot tall. I don't know for sure what his position was.
The reacher
probably
of the tall
ran
things.
The community.
Yeah, he got the top shelf stuff. Yeah.
Because he couldn't fit.
That's what
they call it, top shelf. Yeah.
He dusted it.
So there are places that have those locked in times. And they're all over the place. Any place where there was a lot of trauma, a lot of worship, will lock those places into time. I've had the very good fortune of being able to visit a lot of those places and go back psychically, if you will.
And it's also cool where like tectonic plates meet and things like that, because they can come up, there can be power places as well too, not necessarily back in time.
Ley lines, fortresses.
I was able to, when I was in Costa Rica, where we stayed, there were three, it was one of two places in the world where three tectonic plates meet. And it was...
Oh, it would be amazing, I would think. A lot of energy.
Good energy.
This is constant movement of sorts. Mm-hmm. Energetic sorts, yeah. That'd be fascinating.
You know, where does the constant movement come in?
With the plates themselves, underneath the plates themselves. This earth is constantly moving and shifting. I thought it was really neat going to Lima, Peru, because that's where the El Niños, all the weather starts, right there in Lima, Peru, which is kind of cool. Okay, any questions before we break? Well, y'all brought up some interesting subjects.
Gotta call my travel guide now.